This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. On Monday, news outlets reported a leak that President-elect Obama wanted to name Leon Panetta to be the next director of the Central Intelligence Agency. The choice came as news to Dianne Feinstein, the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, who made it clear she was unhappy to be left out of the loop. Vice President-elect Joe Biden admitted to mistakes, and Senator Feinstein has since indicated she will support the nomination. But there is another issue, Panetta's experience, or lack of it. He's a former congressman who served as President Clinton's White House chief of staff, but has no experience in intelligence, which some consider a plus. In recent years, the CIA's reputation has suffered on any number of fronts. The agency failed to anticipate 9/11, was totally wrong about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. It wrung intelligence from some prisoners with techniques many regard as torture, arranged for others to be tortured in third countries, and maintained secret prisons. Well, if you work at the CIA, or if you used to, tell us what you think of the Panetta nomination and the challenges that he faces to change the CIA. Our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation on our website. Go to npr.org, click on Talk of the Nation. Later in the program, Rick Steves joins us to talk about his latest PBS travel show about his visit to Iran. But first, fixing the CIA, and we begin with NPR intelligence and national security correspondent Tom Jelton with us here in Studio 3A. Happy New Year, Tom.
Same to you, Neil.
And several weeks ago, well-placed sources suggested that John Brennan, a CIA insider, would get the nod as the next director, then that the current director, General Mike Hayden, might stay on, and now it's Leon Panetta. What's happened here?
Neil, you referred to the controversies over torture or coercive interrogation that many would say is tantamount to torture, rendition. One controversy you didn't mention was the Warren plus wiretapping that took place in the Bush administration. These, for a certain segment of, let's say, the Democratic Party, were real hot button issues. And these issues made Obama's choice of CIA director much more difficult, I think, than some of the other selections that he had to make. And initially, the Obama team was leaning towards John Brennan, who's somebody who had advised the Obama campaign on intelligence issues for a long time and was actually one of the leaders of the Obama transition effort on intelligence issues. So he was a 25-year CIA veteran. He'd been head of the National Counterterrorism Center. He'd been chief of station in Saudi Arabia, very well regarded within the community. But what happened when they moved towards picking Brennan as a CIA director, there was this firestorm of controversy from all the people who had been criticizing these CIA practices. And I think that ever since then, the Obama people have been sort of flummoxed, not really sure who to go to.
And they end up with somebody who has little experience, though we're told, at least according to stories, that the current deputy director of the Central Intelligence Agency, a well-respected man named Steve Capus, will stay on, though isn't he tainted by these same procedures that would have excluded Mr. Brennan?
Well, I think it makes a big difference who's running the agency. That seems to be the conclusion here. Steve Capus, the deputy director, certainly was as close to the old CIA leadership, the current CIA leadership, as John Brennan was. But the fact that he would be number two, I think, is a big difference. I think that, you know, what the Obama people are saying with this selection of Leon Panetta is that it's very important to have someone at the top who has a clear position on these issues. And of course, Panetta, even though, as you say, he's not got a lot of experience in intelligence, he did actually speak out within the last year very forcefully against the kind of interrogation procedures that are tantamount to torture.
And will there be some effort, again, by some perhaps in the Democratic Party, to make sure that there is something of a purge at the Central Intelligence Agency of those who authorized or conducted these operations you've been talking about?
Well, this is a real interesting question, Neil, because the truth is that these types of changes aren't that difficult to implement. One person said to me yesterday that Leon Panetta could take care of that on day one. I mean, these are policies or procedures that were approved at the highest levels of the U.S. government, and an order from President Obama or from Director Panetta could eliminate those immediately. So, you know, I think the argument can be made that if that's all you're concerned about at the CIA, you really don't need to have a purge. You could take care of those right off the bat. And that raises the question of, beyond those issues, what other problems are there at the CIA that need to be fixed? And we haven't seen a lot of discussion of these other issues besides these what I call hot button issues.
Well, we'll get to those in just a moment, but I wanted to bring another voice into the conversation. That's Milt Bearden, who's joining us by phone from his home in Virginia, a former senior CIA officer, co-author of The Main Enemy, The Inside Story of the CIA's Final Showdown with the KGB, along with James Risen. And Milt Bearden, nice to have you on the program today.
Good to be with you.
And what do you think of the appointment of Leon Panetta to be director of the Central Intelligence Agency?
Well, I think it was a good one. I've gone on the record saying that this whole experience issue is a canard. It's overrated. Intelligence is the second oldest profession that man has engaged in. I guess you guys often think yours is the second oldest. But, it's sort of like the NFL. You can either kick it or pass it or throw it or some combination, and I don't think Panetta needs to know anything down in the weeds on that. If he is respected and sent over there by Obama to get the agency the way Obama wants it, and he has the confidence of the president, then that's probably just fine, and I don't think it's a bad idea to have a senior civilian in the mix now when we have so many military people in the national security lashup.
And his, boss, the DNI, or Director of National Intelligence, would be another, well, in this case, four-star admiral.
That's right. You know, I still honestly can't sort through that whole DNI thing, and I'm not sure anybody else can either, what it is and what it should be. I think this new iteration of the CIA chief and the DNI will be able to sort through that in the next few years as they sort through trying to find out what CIA should be in the first place.
Well, that man's name is Dennis Blair, but the DNI only, what, 5 years old, Tom?
Yeah, it's a result of legislation that was passed in 2004. Milt, I have a question for you. This is Tom Gelton. What was it like? You served at the agency when George H.W. Bush came in, and then, of course, James Woolsey came in. Neither of them were experienced intelligence professionals. What was it like to work under outsiders?
Well, you know, I won't be too kind on that, Tom, but George H.W. Bush, quite honestly, packed out of Beijing. He was heading the liaison office there when he came over and took over CIA, and he held it for just 1 year. But there was, an instant love affair, and when he became vice president, whenever he was traveling abroad, and I was always a station chief somewhere, he would insist on being able to sit down alone, much to ambassador's chagrin, around the world with the station chief and just talk the situation over. So he didn't have any experience. Woolsey came in, and I always thought that that was a placeholding position for Woolsey as he looked towards the Pentagon. Same for Deutsch. Casey, I dearly love that man, but he was probably the best and the worst at the same time. DCI, the best and the worst that we've ever had. But they said he was experienced because he'd been in OSS in London. Well, come on. Casey was an operator, and he was close to the president. And he loved the place, had fun with it. It came to life, and a lot of things were going on. But, you know, my 30 years at CIA, I would still say that the experience thing for a director just never played much of a role.
If you work at the CIA or used to, give us a call, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org, and let's get a caller on. This is Jim. Jim with us from Sacramento.
Yes, I worked with Leon Panetta for 2 years on the governor's bipartisan commission to retain all the military bases in California. And I, for one, agree with the last caller that all this emphasis on experience in the minutiae of the CIA is misplaced criticism. Leon Panetta is energetic far beyond his chronological age. He's extremely intelligent. He's a lawyer by training. He's an elected official and a leader by trade. His management skills are excellent. They couldn't find a better fellow for this job. There's civilian oversight at DOD. Why shouldn't there be, quote, civilian, unquote, oversight at CIA? The choice is inspired. I think he's perfect for the job.
Jim, thanks very much. And I guess, Tom Gelton, that leads us to the question you were raising before, and let's ask Milt Bearden about that. Clearly, there are other problems other than these policies that the new director of the Central Intelligence Agency is going to have to deal with. Well, our next guest, I think, would call it the culture of failure.
Well, indeed. I think that the CIA, for good or ill, has taken a number of huge hits since 9/11, and certainly whatever in the world was going on in the run-up to the Iraq War, and it's time that adult supervision gets in there, and at the same time, I think that it's important that President-elect Obama send Panetta out to Langley, Virginia, and whisper in his ear on the way out into the woods, say, "I don't expect to see you here every morning giving me the president's daily brief." That, I think, is one of the more dangerous developments in the last 7 or 8 years. In the old days, the director almost never went down to brief the president on a daily basis. And of course, every one of them would run down with something important. But my own feeling is that once the director of CIA is in that early morning coffee clutch in the West Wing or the Oval Office, he no longer becomes a good sounding board for a president. He becomes part of that cabal. And I would hope that Obama would tell him, you know, just stay out there. Send me some nice GS-15 every morning to tell me what's in the PDB, and I'll get back to you if I need anything. And you should occasionally come to me with some bad news.
Now, GS-15, a top-ranking bureaucrat in the PDB, the president's daily briefing. Stay with us, if you will, Milt Bearden. We're going to ask Tom Gelton to stay with us as well when we come back. We're going to be joined by John Diamond, who, well, I mentioned the culture of failure, his new book, The CIA and the Culture of Failure. Again, if you work there, if you used to, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about how to fix the Central Intelligence Agency and the challenges facing the next CIA director. That's widely expected to be Leon Panetta, a former White House chief of staff, a man with no direct experience in intelligence. If you work at the CIA or used to, give us a call. What needs to be fixed and how should he go about doing it? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. Go to npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Our guest, Tom Gelton, NPR intelligence and national security correspondent. Milt Bearden is also with us on the phone. He's a former senior CIA officer and co-author of the book, The Main Enemy, the inside story of the CIA's final showdown with the KGB, along with James Reston. And John Diamond joins us now. He's reported on intelligence, defense, and foreign affairs for the Associated Press, the Chicago Tribune, and USA Today. He's the author of a new book called The CIA and the Culture of Failure. He's joined us here in Studio 3A. Nice to have you on the program.
Nice to be here.
And you trace a lot of the problems at the CIA to sort of, it's almost a ping-pong effect. One of the reasons you argue that the CIA missed, was so wrong about weapons of mass destruction before the invasion of Iraq in 2003 is they were wrong about Iraq's weapons of mass destruction before the 1991 Gulf War.
Right. There certainly was, especially in the post-Cold War years, a tendency at the CIA to overcorrect. And I write in the book about how the CIA had said that Iraq was not close to getting a nuclear weapon at the time of the Persian Gulf War. After the war, the UN inspectors come to find out Iraq had been much closer than anyone thought to nuclear capability. And there were senior analysts who told me after the Iraq invasion, when it became clear there were no WMD in Iraq, that when they were making those estimates that helped propel the country into this war, still ongoing, They said we weren't going to repeat the mistake we made at the time of the Gulf War. There was this sort of mentality of overcorrection.
And another problem, structural problem, you write about has been the vast turnover of personnel at the agency and consequent morale problems.
Right. Well, there, with the end of the Cold War and the end of the main reason for being of the CIA, the collapse of the Soviet Union, there wasn't so much turnover then as stagnation. In other words, they weren't making any new hires. And the old Soviet hand, sorry, Milt, just speaking generalities here, but the Soviet hand stayed on. Some of them were excellent people, but they didn't have the regional expertise necessarily that was going to be critical in mid to late decade after the Cold War. And it was only when George Tenet took over in 1997 that they began that process of ramping up recruiting, which probably only now is really starting to pay dividends because it takes that long to really train a full-up CIA officer.
So the people there now, are they very different from the people who were there 10 years ago, 15
years
ago?
There's definitely been a generational change. There's a lot of new expertise coming in. There still are headwinds. Even now, after so many years where people have been saying publicly, we need more Arab speakers and other speakers of esoteric foreign languages, if you apply for a job at the CIA and you've lived overseas or have a parent from overseas, and even if you're fluent in one of the languages that's desired, it's tough to get hired because of security concerns.
Let's get another caller on the line, and let's go to this is Terry. Terry with us from San Francisco. Terry, you there?
Yes.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello, Milt. This is Terry. We were together in Hong Kong.
Oh, goodness, yes. How are you?
Pretty good. Listen, my view on this is, and I think Casey was a perfect example, the DCI has to be somebody who, when he calls the White House, they're going to answer the phone.
Doesn't the president usually answer the phone if the DCI calls up?
No, not at all.
No, I would defer to Milt on that one, but
I've been in Casey's office when he wanted to pass along something to the president, and I've seen him make the call himself and say, "Hey, Ronnie, you got to know this." You know, the old joke about that. You remember the small aircraft that crashed inside the White House on the lawn? They said that was Jim Woolsey trying to get an appointment with Clinton. Indeed, I think you've got to be able to do that. You've got to have the confidence, the absolute confidence of the president. He has to understand that this thing can help him or it cannot help him. But you have to watch out for falling into the trap that I think George Tenet fell into, which was to go down there every morning and brief the president.
And Terry, what do you think of the Panetta appointment?
Well, the other thing that the DCI has to do is he has to provide top cover for the operators. I specifically exclude things like torture. Milt wrote a brilliant piece on how torture is worse than a crime; it's a blunder. But the DCI has to be able to say, okay, my people are doing some things that might not look good on the front page of the New York Times, but that's what we do.
And
I don't know if Panetta will A, have the guts to do that, or B, have the smarts to know when he should provide top cover and when he should be firing people.
And John Diamond, that would be critical for morale.
Right. Although, you know, I think in the years I covered the CIA and in writing this book, I found that there were generally two streams of reporting on the CIA. One stream was their mistakes, their mess-ups, operations that went badly, things they were doing such as harsh interrogation that people objected to. And then the other stream was the quality of intelligence coming to the president. Is it good or is it not good? After 9/11 and the war in Iraq, the focus was on the quality of intelligence. Now, 7-8 years later, the focus is on the things the CIA does and do we object to them or do we accept them. I think that Panetta will have to be careful to make sure the emphasis stays on the quality of intelligence, because at the end of the day, that's really where we're going to get burned or not burned if there's another terrorist attack or some crisis that erupts somewhere.
Tom?
No, I agree completely with what John just said. I mean, I think the really the most much more serious issues about the CIA right now are not as of today, not does the agency torture, but why hasn't Osama bin Laden been caught? What's going on with the North Korean nuclear program? What's going on with the Iranian nuclear program? How are we going to prevent future terrorist attacks? What is the status of our liaison relationships with foreign intelligence services? I mean, these are the issues that really determine the success of the CIA and other intelligence agencies. And I think the focus, you know, with all this hubbub about these hot button issues, the focus has shifted away from what are really more serious long-term issues.
And Neil, a quick point on the issue of the title of the book, Culture of Failure, just one example of what I mean. On the Iraq WMD issue, the general public commentary was, gosh, it's just shocking. What a terrible mistake. We go in and there's no WMD. They said there was WMD in Iraq. The reason there was no WMD was the result of a very specific program run by the UN and supported by the CIA. The CIA helped make sure there were no WMD. The trouble is, at the end of the decade, the CIA wasn't able to determine whether the program it participated in had been successful.
Terry, were you trying to get in there?
Yeah, that's, you know, blaming the CIA for Iraq and the WMD is kind of a stretch. I mean, George Bush...
Terry, people will remember the phrase, slam dunk.
George Bush and Dick Cheney would have gone into Iraq regardless of what the DCI said. And, you know, the fact that George Tenet, who... as Milt said, was more concerned about getting down to see the president every morning than perhaps some of the other things he should have been interested in.
I just would throw in that both can be true. It can be true that the primary fault for the decision to go to war lies with the president, and that the president might well have made that decision regardless of what intelligence was saying, but also the intelligence was flawed. And on the slam dunk comment, which was...
was flawed. I mean, you've been an analyst. You know that.
I've not been. I've been an author and a reporter. But we certainly, I think we'd all agree that it's an error-prone business. There's bound to be missing pieces of the puzzle. But that slam dunk comment, by the way, we know from Bob Woodward's reporting, was President Bush's remark, was George Tenet's remark in response to President Bush saying, this intelligence doesn't seem all that persuasive. I find that to be really revealing, not so much about Tenet, but about the president. Here he was a few months before we invaded Iraq saying that the case we're making for war isn't that strong, and yet he went ahead anyway. Mm.
Terry, thanks.
Wasn't this just entirely a systemic failure of the United States national security team? I mean, for goodness sakes. Even today, they're saying, well, look, we weren't just wrong. It was all of the Europeans and everybody. Well, you know, that's a bogus argument. The reality is that most of those other intelligence services don't spend the resources to cover certain things that the CIA is covering for them and that they have heretofore been willing to believe. The exceptions are the French, who didn't agree with us and do their own thing, and a couple of others. But most of the intelligence services of the world concentrate on the two or three things that are important to them nationally and read our daily liaison brief, which tells them what's going on in the rest of the world. So if they say, yeah, there are weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, it's because we told them, not because they reached that conclusion on their own. It's back, you know, the slam dunk thing is probably because the DCI is part of the morning coffee clutch and not because he drove all the way from Langley to make that statement. And I think this is really important that they get that right as we enter a new period.
Terry, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go to another caller. This is John. John with us from, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Dofuniak Springs in Arizona?
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Go ahead, please.
I think I totally support Panetta's appointment. I oppose General Hayden simply because he is a military man. I think it would be a wonderful thing for the nation to have fresh blood from the best analysis that is headed toward a desired end as opposed to an end dealing totally with the data.
And, John, do you have expertise in this?
I have a strong military background. I have a good bit of intelligence work in the Navy. I have a brief association with the FBI back in the 70s.
Okay. We're going to let you go because your phone is not of the highest quality, but thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
We're talking about the new director of Central Intelligence. Supposedly, it's going to be Leon Panetta, the former White House Chief of Staff under President Clinton. We're talking with NPR Intelligence and National Security Correspondent Tom Jelton, with Milt Bearden, a former senior CIA officer and co-author, along with James Risen, of The Main Enemy, The Inside Story, the CIA's Final Showdown with the KGB, and with John Diamond, who writes about defense, intelligence, and foreign affairs, and wrote a book called The CIA and the Culture of Failure. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Milt Bearden, let me go back to you. As you look ahead to what the CIA needs to do and needs to focus on, what might a Director Panetta, should he be confirmed, what might a Director Panetta do on that first day?
Well, I think that this Director Panetta will probably go in and deal with, I think it was John was talking about, a quick fix, or Tom, on the torture issue, and say, you know, here's the policy. Just lay it out. Then that's taken care of. That's done, and it's over. The tidying up will be hugely more complicated on the issue of renditions, and then what does one do with what all of these people that are still being held by the United States? But on the second day forward, then he's probably going to have to say, what do we need here? What is Langley going to be? Is it going to be a national collection service and support elements around it? Do we continue to have this amalgam of covert action and then close support to military operations and all of that? Or does that get moved out somehow and then we get a professional collection service that goes after these hard targets that will be North Korea, other issues, key intelligence questions that are going to come up? I don't know the answer to that, but I think those are the questions, and somebody's going to have to look at it. Perhaps you do want to start splitting these pieces up a little bit, since we have still got to go hunt down some people, and that might best be done with another configuration, perhaps separate from the collection service.
John Diamond.
Milt, a quick question that you would know. Do you feel that when the new administration comes in, and assuming they carry out their stand to change the policy on interrogation, that it will be a morale downer for the CIA? I would throw in that it would not be, in the sense that at least there will be clarity, that the officers in the field will know exactly what their instructions are, what they can and can't do, and that actually it can be hurtful to morale when you're doing these tough interrogations if there's fear that you're going to be left hung out to dry and maybe even prosecuted for what you've done.
It's going to be both, isn't it? There will be clarity, and then, okay, so from this day forward, thou shalt not.
Mm-hmm.
There are a huge number of people who are hanging out there anyway and who cannot win this thing one way or another. There are already a number of officers that can, quite honestly, never travel to Europe, the 26 indicted in the Milan case. So, I mean, there are a number of people who are going to have to take their ski holidays in North Korea, for God's sake. But I think that the morale will go up. I've known people who were serving at CIA during this time, who very senior people who assiduously avoided any meeting where the topic was rendition or enhanced interrogation, because they wanted no part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this thing gets immensely complicated because the U.S. will protect these people, as I suppose it must, since it was ordered by the highest levels. But that will open up wide sealed indictments all over Europe for a lot of the names that we all know. And I think that this thing is going to be hanging over the heads of mid-level people for a long, long time. But
quick comment from Tom Jelton, if we could.
Well, Milt, you say the United States will protect them, but isn't it true that there are an awful lot of CIA officers who have had to hire their own lawyers in the last couple of years as a result of these quasi-criminal issues hanging over their heads?
Of course they have. I think somehow they're going to, there will be some, I don't think legislation, but they will be somehow protected. But, I mean, my God, after I left CIA, these poor guys had to start buying malpractice insurance. Come on.
This is something that that Panetta will have to address. There are a number of people who are very, very vulnerable legally and will have to lawyer up on this thing unless there is sort of a blanket amnesty for them. But, you know, you can't stop at a few PFCs from Cumberland, Maryland. You know, you've still got Addington and Haynes and you and all these other names that we know are involved, and that's going to be sorted out.
And those were people at the Vice President's office and the Department of Justice and various other places. Milt Bearden, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Milt Bearden, former senior CIA officer. Our thanks as well to NPR correspondent Tom Gelton and to John Diamond, whose new book is The CIA and the Culture of Failure. And thank you for your time today, too.
Thank you.
This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.